And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 678. We're here to recap your week 16 fab, talk about some second half situations to monitor or just move on from, and much, much more, as we will probably go down a few rabbit holes on this show, as we tend to do with this guest. First, you can find me on Twitter at BDNtrick, and my guest, who comes at me most of the half the season when Ben's not around, or when Mike's not around, Ben's around, something like that. But you can find him on Twitter at Mike_Curlin. Mike Curlin, how are we doing, my friend?
Hi, Bubba.
How we doing, buddy? How we doing?
I think that right there sums it up, right? Like, I start the week off optimistic, and then it just goes up in flames every week. But I'm still here pushing forward and chipping away at what's been a rather rough year so far.
Yeah, well, that's good. It's good. We talked about it quite a bit. So you got to vent it away, so that's good. But how's everything else going? How's MLB playing time going? What's going on? It
doesn't make me feel any better.
Well, I'm still sad. Well, that's what we're here to record. Rest up. No.
Have fun. Everything's good. It's good, man. I'm just kind of like today I did the big update. Like I update the transactions every day or two, but it's actually there's been stuff. Like, so I spent like a few hours today updating things in the morning, and then I got to the Fairchild news, but then there was like another something since. And I'm like, you know what? That's going to be later on after the podcast or tomorrow morning. I've realized that. It's just one of those, I think it's the Angels stuff. All the Angels, like the DFA for Snow, and all that will be updated in the morning. But it's during spring training, I'm on top of it because it's really important in season. I can do it every couple of days. You know, I'm not killing myself, but I'm still doing it pretty much every day or every other day. So yeah, but it's going good. I'm just updating lineups all the time, updating transactions, and we'll be playing in the main thing I still use for all that is actually the tool on the site, which is the dashboard, which helps with the, you know, with like, you can look over dates, the date range, lefty, righties, you can split it up to see who's playing where, who's hitting where, and who's how many starts each player has. So like, that's the kind of right now, those are the two main things on the site. I haven't had time to write at all. So it's kind of just been maintaining that site, and updating make sure the dashboard is always up to date, which it is. So
perfect. Yeah. It's always a great tool.
Evergreen stuff.
Yeah, evergreen stuff, and see where it goes in the future, as they say. So looking forward to it, but let's talk about some situations here. And we were kind of talking throughout the day on some of these, but I want to start off. First, we'll get to some guys with like playing time concerns, I guess. But I want to hit on some, we talked fab. I want to talk about some pitchers that are going to be returning, hopefully close to the All-Star break, maybe within like a few weeks after the All-Star break. So, you know, we talked stashing on previous shows. Maybe you can't stash right now, but maybe these are pitchers that bring you upside. Maybe this is just fool's gold. But I want to talk about a few guys like Robbie Ray for the Giants. He is making another rehab start this week at AAA. It'll be on Thursday. He's made four rehab starts at the rookie level ball. I've seen him down at low A, and now he's going to head to AAA here. He might need one more after this, but he's getting pretty stretched out right now. He went 3 2/3 in his last outing. So Ray's a guy that I know some people have already started to stash. What are your thoughts on a guy like Robbie Ray? Because I'm always skeptical on anybody coming off of Tommy John surgery, but the way pitching is these days, I'm kind of interested.
Yeah, but the problem is I think there's better coming. Especially like now, Ray, I do think there's a lot to like there, and I think he's going to go for a good price or a high price, especially. But It's the fact that they like the common thing is when you come back from Tommy John, the last thing to come back is your control. And now you're talking about Robbie Ray, who's notoriously a control issue pitcher, right? Like, we know the strikeouts will probably be there, but the guy just has always had an issue with, I mean, up until his breakout and even beyond that, at times he loses control. So it kind of scares me that, like, what if he comes back and the control just isn't there? I haven't followed all that closely in the minors because I don't play in leagues where I can pick up guys until they play. Because these days I'm just NFBC. So like I've kind of defaulted like my brain until I know he's coming back. And when he's a little closer, I know he's a couple weeks away, but I'm trying to see right now what he's been doing.
I got it for you right here. He's made six starts in the walks minors.
Or whatever.
Yeah. Rookie's got two total walks in 16 innings, 24 strikeouts.
That'll play. His AAA start. The walks came back a little bit, 9.5% walk rate in AAA. Yeah,
one walk and three innings pitched.
Yeah. That's why. Okay. That makes sense. That's one thing that's concerning is will the control be there? But like you said, if you have injuries, you have guys like, I know Heal is probably a bad example because he just bounced back. But you have a guy like that or guys like that where it's like, oh man, they've been overperforming all year. you might like Robbie Ray is among many names that, but it's one of those things where Robbie Ray is kind of like, he's gonna be good, but I just like, I don't want, I guess, because half this list that we have, in front of me, and there's others that we'll talk about that might like a little more, might be cheaper, might be more expensive, but guys I might trust more. Robbie Ray is a great seal. It's one of those guys, I think he's the guy that's like, the ceiling is probably as good, especially home park and all that. The ceiling is really there, like really high ceiling, but the floor can be Robbie Ray of old, which scares you from start to start.
Definitely. All right, then let's talk about his teammate, Alex Cobb, who made his second rehab start recently, throwing two innings, striking out five in single A on Friday night. He'll probably get at least two more rehab starts. We got up to 45 pitches in this last one, which is a plus, obviously. He struck out nine, allowing one run and one walk over four innings so far in his two rehab outings. So, again, this is another guy that we should be getting back somewhat soon after the All-Star break, maybe a week or two after. Would Alex Cobb interest you a little bit more? Because Cobb should be available on the waiver wire, because a lot of people drafted Alex Cobb thinking he'd come back early to start the season.
He was a guy I was looking in the stash the last couple of weeks. I didn't get him anywhere just because either A, he ended up being bid on higher than, like, more than for a higher price than I was willing to give him, or B, because I have a hard time stashing right now in certain spots. But Cobb's one of those guys where you kind of just, he's like old reliable, just a guy that you can kind of just put him in there. He's a rotation stabilizer of sorts, if for lack of a better term. Like, he's just good, you know what I mean? He's not great, he's not flashy. A lot of times the defense lets him down, as you would know. But Cobb is just a guy, but like the best kind of just a guy where I feel like it's very, and he's better for your 15s. That's maybe why I like him. So I like him more because he has that ceiling to be like your SP3 at best, but he's better off as your four or five most of the time. And I think you'll be able to pay a price if you're not already stashing him. You're already able to pay a price for Cobb that is like, even when he comes up, if you had to wait to all that, I don't think it'll be too expensive because people do see him as more of the bench streamer type. And I think that's the floor though, whereas the ceiling is like, hey, you know what? We're gonna put him in there more weeks than not.
Yep, I'm with you on that one. I am a big Alex Cobb fan, so I'm looking forward to it. I think he'll be very, very solid down the stretch here, and be willing to stash if you can. Like you said, not all leagues you're able to because you're just in a world of hurt, but I would be looking to stash Alex Cobb because when we get to Fab once again this week, some fun hitters to talk about. Pitching continues to be, let's say, questionable is the way I'll put it. Jacob DeGrom, this one's a little more of a potential long shot probably because he's just through a bullpen session. We're probably thinking mid-August, late August. So you might get like a month and a half out of Jacob DeGrom. But we've all talked about it in the past, a month and a half of Jacob DeGrom, it's pretty darn awesome. Now, what Jacob DeGrom is coming off of TJ, but what's your thoughts on potentially stashing Jacob DeGrom wherever you possibly could?
That's, like you said, that's the lottery ticket, right? And a bullpen session now brings you back in mid to late August, like give or take.
Yeah, it's going to be a while.
DeGrom he's up there. Like Lazardo's not on this list, and I don't plan on talking about Lazardo, but those are the guys where I know DeGrom is better than Lazardo, but those are guys that are returning, like, you know, roughly mid August that you only stash if you're in a position that's cashing right now that you think that, okay, I can get by till then. I'm healthy right now, and I'm going to go ahead and stash these types of guys with huge upside, like potentially league winning or lead stabilizing potential. And DeGrom is that guy that can take you from third to first if he's healthy for 6 weeks, or like not really by himself, but you know what I mean? Like, he can boost your team to a point where like he can get you like two or three wins, the strikeouts, all the ratios, a guy that can really just bring it home for you. And I don't think you should be stashing. This is more of a strategy type of thing. It's you're looking at these guys where it depends on what position you are in the standings and what your team looks like. My teams are in spots where I'm like, yeah, I'm making tough cuts or tougher cuts than people might think because
cutthroat curling. So it's okay.
Yeah. Right now that's what we're doing. We're going full cutthroat curling right now because I don't have the time to hold on and wait. And honestly, it might even be too late for me, but I'm still going to try. And this is about it's almost like I'm not at a point where I have to, like, instead of me like punting up a stat, I'm punting players like off my roster that aren't going to produce for me within the next week or two. And if I do have IL stashes, they are going to be guys that return right around the All-Star break or right after. And, but like, so going, so full circle back to DeGrom, it's just, it really is a matter of, I hate, you know, it's always like it matters. It depends. But that's what stashes are. It really matters on ETA, it matters on where you're at in your league. And it matters if you have the ability to stash them in a spot that won't affect you from continuing to either gain or hold your spot in the standings.
At the end of the day, I got more stashing questions for you. Tyler Molle, his teammate, is making his second rehab start, going through another two innings, hopefully. But he's expected back early August, so literally like a week or two after the All-Star break. With Tyler Molle, maybe obviously he'll be back before DeGrom, should be back around the same time as Robbie Ray. How does Tyler Molle stress, you know, feel to you?
I look at Molle and I kind of put him with Cobb. Like, I think maybe there's a little more ceiling there because I will just be honest that I've always been a Molle guy. I was in on him when he got hurt, and I always bought into those little, like, we would see it, like, 2021, the 180 innings of a 3.75 ERA. And then, like, in 2022, when Molle had the 120, but like the 4.4 ERA, but all the underlying metrics suggested better. So I was like, you know what? And I know he didn't, you know, stay healthy, and he had the 3.88 Sierra, which was very, like, everything was in line with the 2021 season that he broke out, but just the ERA never hit that. And then obviously we know that the injuries just got the best of him after that. But at the end of the day, I really do like Molle. I do think Cobb is safer. Molle has a little more ceiling, especially win potential on that team, in my opinion. Great division to pitch in too, especially after the trade deadline. Maybe not. I have to think about that. Seattle. I'm trying to think who else. Seattle, the Angels, yeah. The Astros, I don't know. Are they? You think they're sellers? I don't know. That division isn't tough. Unfortunately, the offense that they pitch for has been really bad compared to years past. The A's, yeah, it's a bad division. I had to think about that. I'm over here trying to think while talk. That's a combination that doesn't usually work well. I did it, though.
Thinking and talking, I got there. Bad idea.
I got there, though. At the end of the day, I held true to the fact. I'm standing behind my statement. So Molly's another guy. He's in that Cobb discussion. So what I said about Cobb and how I feel about him, I do like Cobb more because I think the ETA is sooner. So that would be the deciding factor. The tiebreaker, if you will, that would be that for me. But at the end of the day, if I had to pick, like, I would probably go Molle, yeah, I guess. But I don't know. Give me Cobb. Cobb's coming off the lower body injury instead of the.
Yeah, oh, wow. That's kind of what I'm thinking. Let's have fun with this one. Tyler Kode Senga. He's going to make his second rehab start. They're going to try to give him to 50 pitches at AAA. They want him to 70 or 80 before he returns. He actually looked really good in his last rehab start, given the competition. Let's take that with a grain of salt, but looked good. Came out of it healthy. Basically, if he gets to 50 pitches this time, it's one, two more starts max. They're expecting him back before the end of July. Kode Senga is another player available in a lot of NFBC leagues because he was drafted. So would Kode Senga rate for you over Cobb, or are we, you know, playing games there?
Yeah, Senga's above pretty much all these guys for me, but with the caveat of, if the Mets are sellers, what are they doing in September with Senga? Are they going to limit him to 3 to 4 inning outings just to kind of give him innings but not push him?
What about the old adage? Let's worry about that when we get there.
You're right. I just, it's one of those things where if you're looking for tiebreakers, do you want the guy, and do you want Senga, who's going to be back the soonest but potentially won't be there for you down the stretch, or the guy like a DeGrom that might be back the latest but unlikely? I think there's less likelihood of him getting overly limited down the stretch because they might want to get 30 innings or so before the season ends, just entering the year or exiting the year on a high note, get them. And they might even send the Rangers. I believe in the Rangers competing more than I believe in the Mets, although the Mets have been great. So I don't really hate the Mets like a lot of people do. Like, it's not like I actually kind of root for them because I root for the teams that just always have all the chaos. Like, I want them to succeed at least once, or maybe just tease their fans like, haha, we almost did it, but we actually are the Mets. It's kind of fun to it's kind of fun to watch them, their misery at the same time. But at the end of the day,
when it happens over and over and over again, yeah, you know.
At the end of the day, though, you're right. Worry about it when you get there. I think that's the best way to approach it. But if you're looking for a reason for pessimism, it's just that if the Mets do fall out of it, Senga could be limited in final month just to limit his exposure and potential for re-injury, because it's already been a long, agonizing injury. And
that's why we bring you on the show, is to bring that pessimism. That's for sure.
Well, so, yeah, because, you know, I can't. I told you, I warned you. The offseason, you saw the vibes I was bringing.
I already got a text from someone saying it looked like you're really depressed, so you're good. I got two more pitchers I'm asking you about. Yoshinobu Yamamoto starting to play catch. They're shooting for a mid to late August return from him. I'm out, but I'm just throwing it out there because people love Dodgers pitchers. Like, I've been out on Kershaw this whole time, and if he proves me wrong, fine, but I'm not a believer there. We've seen a lot of their pitchers coming back from injuries, not going great. So you mentioned what are the Mets going to do with Senga. What are the Dodgers going to do with Yamamoto? Like, they're not going to overuse that. They paid him, what, 10 years? Like, they can't abuse that.
No, but they're going to be a playoff team. So I think it's one of those when he returns, he will be healthy type. They're not going to let him come back early, which is nice. I think that much. I have faith in them doing that right. You know what I mean? Like, let him come back, and when he comes back, Yamamoto won't come back unless he's healthy, given the team, where they're going to be at, what their plans are for the playoffs. And that also helps him not be limited. He might get his last start of the season skipped in anticipation for the playoffs. But I think Yamamoto is one of those guys that's going to go 5 or 6 innings every start because they want him ramped up and ready to go. So if he returns late August, that gives them a month to get him back into full-on game shape, you know, and get back into a rhythm and all that. So I think, but yeah, I'm honestly not really stashing most of these guys because,
can't.
Yeah, but even if I was, it's the ones, and I say most of them because like Senga, I would stash. Cobb, I would stash. Ray's close enough.
Let me ask you one more because Michael C in the chat brings up a good one that I should have had on this list.
I wrote him on the list.
Hey guys, I like Springs maybe the most of the IL guys, non DeGrom after Senga. And then for an update on Jeffrey Springs for people, 4 shutout innings on Wednesday this past week, got up to 62 pitches. He's going to make another rehab start any day now. And they're expecting him potentially back right after the All-Star break, if not just one. Like, he could be the quickest one back out of this whole group, or at least maybe one more after the All-Star break. But he'll be back real soon. So Jeffrey Springs now, where does he come up on this list? Because he's actually looked pretty good in rehab. Again, we all say pretty good in rehab. You know, the competition's not great, but I just want to limit the walks and be healthy. And he's doing that.
I think Springs is at the top of the list. I actually wrote him. I actually made a point to sneak him onto this little outline that I didn't fully read before the show. Because under others, I put him in another name we could talk about. Just because there was an update on Sunday I found interesting. Not that I'm buying in, but just an update worth mentioning. But Springs, yeah, I think he's the guy. Like, if I had to rank him, I think Springs is up there. I think Springs, then that's where it gets tough. Because I think Senga. And then Ray, Cobb, Molly. Ray and Cobb are closer than probably people might give it, only because, again, it's more so Ray's coming off Tommy John and hasn't really. I'd probably put Ray closer. I think I'm underappreciating Ray more than I should. Either way, Springs, Senga, Ray are probably the top guys, obviously, for a reason. DeGrom would be pretty low on that list just because I'm not waiting that long, and same with Yamamoto. And Molly's down there too, just because he's not worth holding till August for me. And I love the guy. I'm pretty high on him, like normally, but not right now.
Yeah, I got Springs, Senga, Ray, Cobb for me, but Ray and Cobb, you could switch if you wanted to. I wouldn't care.
Are we too high on Cobb is the question, because I think we both understand Ray is the better pitcher, but it's coming off the Tommy John part that I think both of us are very skeptical of.
Yep, I'm with you.
And not that Cobb is
Molly
known for
DeGrom. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Like, Molly's good. DeGrom, I don't care about. Yamamoto, I don't care about, so.
And one more guy I added to the list was Clayton Kershaw, because there was an update about him. Well, I'm with you. They're talking about rehab. They're talking about only 2 rehab starts before he joins the rotation, that scares me, because does that mean someone's not healthy? As in, his face?
Didn't they say this last time and they had to get shut down for a week?
And yeah.
Now we're back to the situation.
Oh, I have no Kershaw, not even like draft champions shares, like draft and hold shares. I don't have any Kershaw. I just found it interesting that they, like you said, he was shut down. Next thing you know, like, hey, Kershaw, not only is he back, but we're thinking as little as 2 rehab appearances and then activating him. I'm like, that makes his ETA along the lines of the guys we just talked about at the top, like the Cobbs of the world, Molly's, Ray, which would be, again, unexpected. Now, I don't think I'd be breaking the bank for him, but you should root for the return, because when his name hits that, he wasn't drafted in any leagues, from my understanding, or at least most leagues, he would be a guy that's heavily available in NFBC formats, and you'll see his price vary. He'll be really cheap some spots, not even added to, like, probably wherever there's a lot of money left over this year. Everyone's talking about it. Maybe that we get a couple. I don't think we'll see triple digits for him, but the name value might bring that in some spots.
Yeah. Ben Tidd mentioned, are you worried about the TJ guys? The control usually takes a while to get back. I went all in on Dustin May 2 years ago, and that didn't work out. That's our biggest concern, Ben.
Especially with Ray. I think that was like the main
thing. I like how your concerns with Ray, but not Molly.
Well,
they both had TJ.
I think my concerns with Ray are because
he's had it in the past.
My expectations are also higher for Ray.
Yeah, that's true. It's fair.
I think the excitement and expectations are way like twice that of Molly. Molly's just a personal favorite. Like, he's the type of guy that I would get a signed card from, like a playing card, just because I like Tyler Molly and it has no value to anybody else.
It sounds like he needs to be on the back of your back wall.
Yeah, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if he was on my teams and helped me win, but I'm not winning this year, so there's no point. But
not with that attitude.
No, I'm going to try. I'm still trying. I'm going to try. I feel like I'm running in mud right now. It's just like, you know, or like you're ever in a dream and you try to punch someone and you just can't punch them. Like, it's like soft, or it's like slow motion. That's how I feel the season's going for me. I'm just punching, but that's what, like, the punches are like that. Anyway, but and my favorite part is Ted just said that text that you got about my depression wasn't from him.
Yeah, it wasn't
from him. No, it was funny because there's only like a few people, and I thought Ben was one of them. I'm like, oh, it's either him or Ryan, I feel like, would have said that. Well, secret hit a home run. I'm happier now.
Find out later. Let's talk about Baltimore Orioles, because this one's been fun all season, but like, it kind of settled for a second because Colton Cowser erupted and he played, and they sent the other prospects home. But now Heston Kjerstad's up, and he's hitting, and he's kind of playing. He's taking Colton Cowser's role a little bit. Something going on there. You got Ryan Mountcastle, who's in a platoon situation. Like, there's a lot of moving pieces in Baltimore. So how do you see this playing out? Because, like, Colton Cowser, not nearly the same guy he was to start the year. And if he loses playing time, that's going to be a problem. Kjerstad, you know, had a great 10-game run right now, looking really good. We saw that from Cowser earlier this year. So how would you assess this Baltimore situation?
It's a pain. It's an absolute pain. It's an absolute pain to deal with. And I'm a Cowser. I'm a Kjerstad guy. I've been pretty vocal about that, even from the preseason. I have so many, and I'm starting him in most spots because I sat him the weekend he hit his grand slam because he started versus a lefty randomly, because they had two out of three. He was sitting the first day against a righty. They had a lefty and a righty left, so I'm like, he's probably gonna play one out of three in DH or pinch hit. I mean, and then he ended up starting against a lefty and hit a grand slam. I don't know if it was against a righty or a relief pitcher in that game. It doesn't really matter. Point is Kjerstad's usage is kind of sporadic, same as Cowser's. Cowser's was getting better and then just stopped again. Like, it just shunted, like right there and then. I don't understand what happened exactly, but it's tough. Like, so I'm pulling it up to be exact, but I know I looked at it earlier, and it was like Cowser started just one of the last three righties. You had Mountcastle starting two of three, and you had Mullins still starting all three, but Mullins has slowed back down, so that can flip. I'm looking at, I just pulled it up. I'm looking at it.
You got Mountcastle has, he's played the last two, so three out of four. Hasn't played the last two.
No, and he's only played one of the last three total. But then if you look at lefties, Cowser's on the weak side of a platoon right now, which is weird because he
played against the lefty. What the heck is that all about? Well,
Cowser's on the weak side of a platoon because his defense in center field is all they have there for Mullins, but he's also hitting lefties better. So it's weird because he is Cowser's in a weak side of a platoon right now. Well, it's the weirdest thing.
And Clint Kjerstad's only played three of the last six games.
Yeah, that's why. And so it's aggravating. Like, overall, it's just aggravating to deal with. And so
I guess the point of the question is, then, how do we roster these guys?
I'm literally taking it half week by half week with them in FBC formats, and in their best suited for daily leagues, obviously. But yes. So I was really close to cutting Cowser in the 12. In OC. I have a couple OC shares.
I cut Cowser this last week.
And you're not wrong. I don't think you're wrong too. I just remember, like, as soon as I was getting ready to Cowser got hot again, hit those home runs, and got like, was playing every day again randomly. But Cowser's only played two of the last four or five games.
Yeah, wow. It's been bad.
I didn't realize, and Kjerstad only has two of the last five as well. That's something was wrong there. I must be like, yeah. I'm looking at something wrong.
No, you're not. Because Austin Hayes is back. Hayes has played three out of the last five, two righties. Hayes has gotten to play against righties.
That's right. Hayes is.
You used to think that Cowser and Hayes would basically just platoon it. That has not happened.
Yeah, that's so Hayes was platooning, and Hayes started playing against righties. Mateo actually lost playing time. Urias is taking over. It's a mess. If your name is not Ryan O'Hearn, Anthony Santander, Gunnar Henderson, Jordan Westberg, and I guess Mountcastle is a little more secure, but I'm still not sold on the security. I think that could fluctuate, although there was kind of an illness in there that kind of maybe masked his usage. It's becoming a mess. Yeah, I have Kjærstad on my bench right now, and for the first half of the week, they have a couple lefties coming up and all that, but I'm holding on to some of these pieces in deeper formats, using them as bench streamers and such, because I do think that they're all actually good, but not all. I think Kjærstad and Kaller specifically are actually good players. In 15s, I want to hold. In 12s, they're cuts probably. I would try to. I'm still holding because I just believe in the upside on those guys, but they're easier to cut there by a long shot. But in 15s, I'm holding on my bench right now where I can.
It's the old joke. They're one injury away, right? One injury away from
or team. Trade. This team, and that's another thing. This team is gonna have to make a deal. So
one of them could be in the trade.
That's the thing. Is Kowser or Kjærstad could easily be dealt away for whatever they want, or maybe Mountcastle gets dealt away. Either way, there's open. O'Hearn can be dealt. They have so many pieces that like you can laugh at O'Hearn being dealt. O'Hearn's been so good; he actually has value, especially cheaper. He's probably cheaper to acquire than all these names as well. But I feel like the Orioles are in a position to make a splash.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens. But so it's one of those things where it's like these guys in 15s, I'm trying to hold on because I think if the playing time, if it's not an injury, it's a trade, or I'm willing to give it a little time to let it figure itself out because I think by the end of July, we get these guys playing almost every day for a team somewhere.
Well, I'll believe it when I see it. Michael C. in the chat says, I'm putting on my Uncle Ted hat. Angel Martinez, five straight starts, batting second. Watched him this weekend, and his plate discipline is exceptional. He doesn't chase. I don't know if there's any category juice there. But, yeah, I looked at it. Martinez went 2-for-4 on Monday night before the show started, hitting 400 through seven games. About 4 runs scored, no RBIs, no stolen bases, no home runs. 8 walks, though, so that's pretty impressive. It's an empty OBP and batting average at the moment. So I don't know if it's worth getting too excited about. In the minors, we saw very limited power. He's like a 10-10 guy. So it feels pretty empty to me, but maybe I'm wrong.
Could Martinez be similar to Kwan, not with stolen bases, but could the power play up in this home park now with the changes? Cause Kwan doesn't have power, but suddenly he's hitting for power. So could this, I'm just spitballing ideas here because he makes such Martinez makes such exceptional contact, limits the swing and miss. We're talking like elite zone contact rates already in the small sample, but also in AAA where the sample is larger.
Could he be Luis Urias is the question.
And even that has value in if you need batting average and runs. I think I mentioned to you like 10 runs makes up 3 league points in one league
difference.
Yeah. So those 4 runs, I don't know the batting average and runs, but it's the fact that I love it. I'm always a sucker for a guy who can walk as much as he strikes out or more, and he's done that multiple times in the past. The strikeouts have been more than Urias. That's the only thing. That's the only concern like, in terms of like the comp. But at the end of the day, this guy Martinez profiles to be a good bat, like a solid contact hitter, but like you said, the power is lackluster, and you've seen the stolen bases be there in the past. He's had double digits and a few stops, so I think he can steal bases. I just don't know how much he's going to run. Yeah, he's all right. He's definitely a deeper league guy.
Deeply
goalie. 15 team mix right now if you need middle infield because he offers that, because that's now that can be hard to find, but
I guess the real talk here, though, is with Angel Martinez playing so much, he's playing second base a lot. He's playing all over, center field, second base, third base. He's going to get all kinds of flexibility here.
Tyler Freeman, but, baby.
Yeah, he's taking the Freeman role all over the place. But I guess I was wondering if he's going to take more at-bats from Andrés Giménez, who's been scuffling like crazy, but he hasn't really taken that many. So,
well,
wait and see there.
Giménez is... I was wondering if Giménez would start platooning. That's where my brain went because he did stick against last lefty. I think
that's what I'm wondering. Is that going to make an issue? Then, like 2 weeks, do we say is Giménez worth keeping in 12s pretty soon because he's been so bad? So
him and Bryson Stott have been like surprisingly.
I've been benching Stott lately. I haven't found my way to drop him yet in my 12, but it was close this past week. I told you earlier I dropped Swanson everywhere. We'll talk about that in the Fab, but
it's gonna
Stott
be fun.
Stott was next in line.
It's gonna be fun to buy low on all these guys next year when the prices. But look, this was one of those teams where I think I texted someone about it because I was getting really aggravated looking into their playing time, and it's like the Twins, it's like the Rays. This team, the Guardians are
platoon happy, man.
Not just platoon happy though. It's a bunch of everybody will play 3 out of 4. because everyone gets a day off and they rotate guys.
If you look at their basically from the fifth hole down, it's every 3 out of 4 type thing.
That's what I'm saying. Even and Noel doesn't play against a bunch of righties, but he'll play 1 out of 3. So that's enough to get in there and mess things up. David Fry's lost playing time against the righties, but he'll play 1 out of 3. And it's like, what the? So it's really aggravating to try to figure out an everyday thing. But like, and then on top of that, they have the Schneemans of the world who are still playing every day against righties. And Rocchio is in and out of everyday playing time right now. He's playing every day again. But I don't know if that's just the defense that keeps him in more than anything. It's just really aggravating to try to figure out what is going on and how to deal with this team.
Yep, that is a tough one. Let's go to Boston for a second here, because you want to talk about aggravating. You're one of the best base stealers, it feels like, in baseball. He's also hitting home runs and kind of hitting for average. His name's David Hamilton, and he keeps sitting versus lefties and even sat versus a righty last week, which really made my blood boil, which, if you ask my doctor, probably not a good thing. So David Hamilton is my question for you. And then there's Willy Abreu, who's in a strict platoon, as we know, but the production's also kind of wonky at the moment. So how are we feeling on this? We'll start with David Hamilton, because I cannot drop him knowing how good he is. Because even if he just played on the strong side of the platoon, I could live with that, because he destroys on the versus the right-handed pitching. And then, like you said, week to week, bye week to bye week, just bends him. If there's a couple lefties, no biggie. But the fact that he sat versus a righty, that was not cool.
It was weird. So there was a quote from Cora that mentioned they like Hamilton against like four guys with four seamers or something. So it's like they're just getting super granular and analytical with how they use them, which is fine, I guess. But and Hamilton has started against the last three righties, thankfully. I did look that one because it caught. I think he sat one right before that little run of getting back on the strong side of platoon. And he bats. The funny thing is he didn't play for. Like, I think he only played 3 out of 7 at one point, because I remember. Yeah, I think I mentioned entering the weekend, it was like 3 out of 7 or something like that. And then, but every time he starts, Hamilton bats second. So I'm like, how do you have so much confidence in a guy to bat him second, turn around and not play him against every righty at least, right? Because it was just such a bad run. But now it seems like it's flipped. But then of course, I think yesterday he went like over 4 or 3 Ks, something really bad. So of course, at the end of the day though, Hamilton is what we all wanted Blanco to be. Remember how if Blanco just got regular playing time, well, Hamilton's been that guy, but the problem is he was never that good. He's just not this bad right now, because it's kind of gone back down to the negatives. But I'm with you. No matter where, anywhere I have him, I'm not starting for the first half of this week anywhere, because they have the two lefties in Boston.
Yep, yeah, I had him benched as well.
But if you started him, you're probably getting 6 plate appearances, give or take, and potentially a pinch run spot or two, and he could steal 2 bases tomorrow on your bench, because he's a pinch runner, comes in and takes 2nd and 3rd base, because he just does that. That's the only concern. But the thing is it's not just that with him. So why he still offers value, especially in deeper formats, is that you could plug him in, at least knowing that, yeah, sure, he's not going to be a full-time player, especially in a heavy lefty week, but you know he's playing enough to where he can still provide some stolen base value, especially if you're really desperate for him. But it's just kind of it's frustrating, because he's that on a per plate appearance right now. Hamilton offers something enough to where you got to hold him. But I'm with you. I'm benching him in 2 spots as well. And I feel like we're going to regret it. We're going to look at box scores tomorrow, and he's going to have 2 stolen bases off the bench.
Well, I know, because when he sat versus the righty, I believe it was a Monday, or it was their first game of the week, and I benched him, and he pinch ran that game. It's got like 2 stolen bases. And I was
yes.
Like, freaking awesome. You guys are great. This reminds me of like Josh Lowe last year, where we bench him in the same scenarios. But you mentioned the two lefties and benching Hamilton. So I benched Abreu this week as well, because he's not in the same boat as Hamilton, obviously. But we had high expectations for Abreu. He was actually playing really well earlier, kind of gets hurt. Now he's in this full platoon situation. Like at 15, you're obviously easy hold situation there. But 12, he's got to be inching towards this could be a cut coming up pretty soon if things don't change quickly.
Yeah, and I have him and Cowser in the same leagues. That's the problem. And the thing is Abreu, like Abreu had a 4-game hit streak with like 2 multi-game hits in there, and then he's gone on a 0-for-3-6-9-11 streak since, all against New York and 1 against Miami. So, but Abreu, it's just the tools, you know, like you hate dropping a guy with his types of tools, and we saw how good he can be when he runs hot. And you know that's not just gone, because he's done this before, so you know it can come back at any moment. And you're free, at least I'm afraid to drop him and that happen for someone else. But with that being said, it's getting to a point where I think my this is where I struggle in 12s, because like earlier in the year I was cutting everybody, I didn't care. Now I'm being a little more selective with my cuts as I'm running out of money to make up for bad cuts. But also I'm afraid to drop people that I think I wanted to give him one more week. He's on my bench. I'm going to watch him, and this is my deciding week for him in 12s. And 50, like you said, 15s. All these guys are holding 15s for the most part.
100%. But all right, let's talk Arizona Diamondbacks, because ever since Alec Thomas came back, Jake McCarthy's kind of a figment of our imagination. So how are we assessing this situation? Because McCarthy's playing like 3 games a week. Thomas is playing pretty much every day. Gurriel gets an occasional day off when McCarthy plays. So how are we dealing with this?
So I was one of like one or two, or maybe, I think it was like two or three teams that dropped McCarthy the week that Thomas got activated. And I think that's even, and that was a 15 teamer. I cut him blindly. It was a risk because I thought this was going to happen. And then I kind of regretted it because I dropped him for somebody who wasn't worth adding. So I was like, crap, I could have just at least held McCarthy on the bench as a wait and see type of thing. But it was the right call to make. It was just wrong in terms of who I got for him. But McCarthy is a drop in all formats right now. But of course he'll get traded, and then you'll be mad you dropped him. But he's not playing. He's not playing tonight either, as we record on this Monday. Alec Thomas is in, and I'm looking at it. It's Jock Peterson against a righty, of course, and Gurriel. And Carroll. I knew there was one more. I was getting there. So, and those are your starting DH/outfield on your typical day against a righty. McCarthy, as you mentioned, gives those rest days. 3, maybe 4 games a week if you're lucky. I think McCarthy will play against lefties more often than Thomas will. So the fact that they have a couple of lefties might actually help McCarthy. Not because he's good against them, but because they don't have a whole lot of platoon options in the outfield, like at least enough to cover everything. And I think McCarthy will get some run over other options. So, but even there, he's kind of a, and Uncle Ted just dropped the name, of course.
Ben Ted says peace McCarthy. So he's out.
Oh yeah. I text Ben about, me and Ben both have him, and we talk about him a lot.
Let's go to the Milwaukee Brewers here, because I know it's a player you really liked. I really liked, I had him in some leagues. I dropped him in some leagues this past week. That's Garrett Mitchell. He did play 4 out of the last 6, which is promising, but seems like it might be more sporadic than I thought, but I could be wrong. So what are you seeing with this Garrett Mitchell situation? Are you comfortable with this playing time, or do you still have concerns?
You're tugging at the heartstrings here, Bubba.
Oh, I know. That's why I put this one on there. It's just for you.
Oh, I hate you. So Garrett Mitchell has started against 2 of the last 3. I think what threw people off is because he got that day off against a righty. He did just get back. All right, let's give the guy a chance to get acclimated. But he started against a lefty over the weekend. So that was promising and unexpected. The issue is they face 4 lefties this week, I think, or maybe three now with hers in the minors. I need to double check who their matchup is, but still, I don't expect him to play against many lefties. So I'm thinking 1 out of those 3 he plays. And so he'll play 4 out of 6, I think, this week as well. But Mitchell's a guy that in 12s, he's fringe. I think I'd rather have him over Abreu, and even that's kind of iffy. Maybe Abreu's more secure in the role because he's a strong side platoon guy, but I don't know. Mitchell, he's batting 5th every day. He has the ballpark. I think, I don't know. And I'm also, again, I have to try to remove my bias, but I think at least I can admit that Mitchell's in the same conversation as Abreu, where I'm trying to hold on to him for a week or two, in this case, maybe 2, to see where it goes. But like, he's not a must start guy. Like, obviously this week you can't start Mitchell, so if you cut him, I get it. In 12s, in 15s you're not cutting him, so it makes my life a lot easier there. I honestly don't even know if I have him in 12s. I might have him in 1OC. I'd have to double check. I know I was aggressive on him, but I wasn't like, I realized in 12s that he's not as valuable.
Milwaukee has 4 righties and 2 lefties this week.
Oh, it flipped. It was four.
It's gone. It's 4 and 2 righties versus lefties.
Oh, that changes everything. Because I was looking at it today again, just like to double check everything before I set my lineups. And hey,
who says my show doesn't help people? I'm telling you.
I say it. Oh, it did flip. What the hell? It was 2 and 4.
Well, you didn't believe me. You had to go check.
Well, I had to pull up my sheet and see how I missed it. Oh, because okay, I updated it today, and they have 2 righties over the weekend and 2. And who? But who changed? Priester
joined the rotation, and then hers is in or out. So
okay, Priester. So. Yeah, Priester. See, initially it wasn't Priester. Initially it was or maybe it was Priest. I don't know. There was
Martin Perez, I think.
There was another lefty besides Perez. There was It doesn't matter. I think Marco Gonzalez was the other one people speculated.
Yeah.
All I know is that this makes him a lot better, and honestly, I might be starting him in some spots.
Yep, there you go.
That makes my decisions a little like now. It's like, but now it gets hard, difficult. Do I start Mitchell with those really good matchups, or do I start Peterson, who's only going to play 2 of 4 against? Or I guess it's too late to make a decision now, but that would have been one of my decisions to make. I went with Peterson, knowing he's getting 2 righties and sitting 2 of them, but I couldn't. I didn't feel comfortable starting. I didn't want to start Mitchell with what was expected to be 2 lefties. So I'm not really regretting that decision, but it's frustrating. Right,
so I just did one that tugged at your heartstrings. So now I'll throw a Giants one out there. I wanted to bring up Luis Matos because a lot of people like Luis Matos, and he's a good ball player. But what's going on right now is what's going to happen the rest of the season unless someone else gets hurt. Luis Matos is in a strict platoon against left-hand. He might get an occasional righty, but it last week started against 2 lefties, sat versus righties. The Giants just traded Austin Slater to Cincy, so Matos should stay up and take the Slater role. So I dropped him in 12s because that does me no good at all. And I'm just putting that PSA out there. Do you see anything different than that? But I wanted to throw that one out into the world.
No, Matos is back to being not useful. It's frustrating because it's frustrating because every time he shows a little bit of promise, he doesn't get the run that he deserves to be given. Maybe it'll come after if they ever trade anybody.
But yeah, they might trade some more. I'm kind of hoping Yaz gets dealt and we'll see where some more things go. But I'm kind of overly optimistic on the situation because I want the Giants to reload, not rebuild. They can't afford to rebuild, but it's a whole other story. All right, Curly, let's talk Fab. Let's recap some Fab week 16. I'll bring up the OC stuff as usual. Curlin will give his little tidbits on the 15s. And then afterwards, we'll recap our ad drops of the week because there's going to be some fun ones here. But when it came to OCs, in 206 leagues, the most added player was Brooks Lee because he was available everywhere. He was added for as high as 281, as low as a dollar. I told Curlin one of the leagues I got him in for a cheap price. I had no runner-up bid. It's embarrassing, people. But this is the world we live in. Corey Lee, he already has an RBI single tonight, has now hit safely in all 6 games since he was recalled, or called up, I should say, to make his debut. He is just crushing baseballs, which is great to see. In AAA this year, hitting 329 with 7 homers and a steal. We've seen he was drafted a couple years ago in the 8th overall pick. I'm a big Corey Lee fan. I'm not thinking he's the next greatest thing since sliced bread, but I think he's very serviceable for 2 reasons, and I'll give you the floor, Curlin. Shortstop eligibility right now should gain third base eligibility with Bryce Lewis out. I love that MICI. I talk about it on this show a ton and on Bubba and the Bloom of how hard it is to find like corner infield help these days. So that's big for me. And then the other thing was, is they said they are working him out at second base in the minors because they wanted him to play second base before Royce Lewis got called up. So even when Royce comes back, he can go to second base. We could see second, short, third base eligibility, which would be pretty sweet. So I liked Brooks Lee a lot from all around. I think he can kind of stuff all 5 categories. Maybe not like he's not going to light the world on fire in power and speed, but he'll contribute. Well, I think he'll score plenty of runs and hit for a really good average. So I was a big Brooks Lee fan. We'll get to that later, but I pretty much added him everywhere.
Yeah, so Brooks Lee was a guy that the instant comp in my mind, and people are going to – I was telling you this, and you were very good, like, well-receptive of it, but I think the average person's not going to like this because Colt Keith isn't what the comp you want to hear.
Let me mention something real quick before you go, and I'll mention who – this was your comp. I also said we'll knock a listener question out at the same time right here. Bryce Wisman says, would you rather have Brooks Lee or Colt Keith? Okay, now do your comp, and we'll talk about that.
And because when I saw Brooks Lee's profile – although I think Keith had a little more strikeouts under the hood. I just saw a very similar player, a guy that like, all right, cool. I think the floor is there, and they're both going to have the same eligibility in terms of like the middle, the MICI. Yep. And it was just one of those things where like you feel like you can kind of set them and forget them. They're very solid floor. The ceiling isn't as high, but Brooks Lee's a guy that, and you actually called him Corey Lee, which is funny. But
sorry, Brooks, yeah, it's flashbacks.
Well, I mean, Corey Lee still has his moments. I'm still rostering him in 15s. I'm desperate at catcher. But Brooks Lee's a guy that I just look at him and I like him. I just didn't like him for some of the prices I saw him go for. But I do understand that we're talking everyday plate appearances. We're talking about versatility in terms of position eligibility. We're talking a guy that just has a good hit tool and should not strike out a lot, which should lead to a high floor of production. But will it be flashy? No. Is there potential for some? Like, obviously, he's already hit a home run. He put up 7 home runs and 94 plate appearances in AAA. That's absurd. I don't think Lee keeps up that pace because he's just never shown anything similar to that pace. But obviously, he's still growing into, you know, his build and everything as a prospect and as a person. At the end of the day, though, I like him. I wasn't as high as others, and it's because I think you have a fair expectation. I think it's people like when I was looking at, again, I'm looking at more so main event POV, although you did spend pretty good for him in an OC mm-hmm. in the main event stuff. So that was where it caught my attention because it was just so much more than I anticipated. And I don't know if he's going to be, I don't view him as a difference maker like that. And I think where some of his prices were, you're expecting difference maker production. Not sure yeah. that's coming.
Like I'll say, like, so the Colt Keith comp, which I like, and I was adding him the last couple of weeks for the same reason, because I just need MIs and CIs all over the place. I lost Royce Lewis now, so it just keeps like compounding on me. But like heading into Monday, over the last 3 weeks for Colt Keith, 316, 5 homers, 10 runs, 10 ribbies, 2 stolen bases. Like that might be like a little above his normal expectation. I'm not crazy, but if Brooks Lee can somehow kind of get into that realm of let's hit for average, hit a couple home runs a month, 3 home runs a month, but like maybe 15 runs, 12 RBI, stuff like that. Like just be serviceable all the way through. I'm in. So that was my thoughts on him. And it was more just, I'm looking for a steady guy. That's got, I think Brooks Lee brings a good floor and maybe he'll tap into a ceiling. He's still young. The ceiling might come in a year or two, but at least the floor is there. And that Twins offense is a juggernaut. So like that, like he gets to feed off of that as well. So, and I like Colt Keith a ton. That's why I think the comp's really good. Neither one, I think, are going to be world beaters. Neither one are all-stars obviously this year, but we could be talking about both these guys 2 or 3 years from now and be like, yeah, these are like staples in fantasy all over the place. And I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah. And I do like Lee more to answer that question. I do prefer Lee. I do think Lee has, I think Lee's floor is safer with the ceiling being arguably higher. The only pushback and the arguably higher part is that I don't know if the Twins are going to let Lee run. Lee has his own injury histories coming off his own injury issues this year as well. Not to mention the Twins as a team don't run a lot. So yeah, that's where it's like, if you're expecting stolen bases, maybe temper your expectations, but know that he will hit a few home runs. Lee's going to give you that batting average. He's going to be a 4-category producer and probably sprinkle in a couple stolen bases, but that's fine. And that has a lot of value. So I understand. That's why I'm like, I'm over here contradicting myself saying I don't think he was worth some of the prices, but I do think it has value, especially in deeper formats where the eligibility and the playing time are there. And that's kind of like 90% of the battle sometimes. Yep. But I'm afraid that you pay like some of the price. It's just like, I'm not sure it's going to be worth the amount it costs to acquire them. I wasn't personally wasn't anywhere near the bid prices, but I understand them. It's weird. Like I don't agree with them, but I understand.
Well, especially this time of the year, it's more like, what do you need now to make the move? You can't sit around and wait for the next best thing. So it's like, let's get them and roll and see where it goes. Cause in a month I might be out of it. It won't matter if I have $100 or whatever left over. So,
and also it doesn't help when he comes up, hits every game, has a home run. Yeah, like, so
I wasn't excited about that. That cost me more money.
Yeah. That pushed that, but maybe because I didn't expect him to not hit home runs. I didn't expect Lee not to hit. As soon as he came up, I saw him like, okay, cool. Potential impact rookie. But the fact that like he was going for like, I'm surprised like he went for more than like low, like in again, 15 teamers more than Lo Perfido and got when money was like thrown around, Lo Perfido was bid on. But like, I feel like people were over like even more aggressive with Lee. And I guess because Lee is a top prospect and all that, there's excitement there. Oh, and I'm just trying to think of like, trying to understand. I'm still trying to wrap my head around why the bids were as high as they were in some spots.
Well, let's not worry about that because you're going to keep wrapping your head around things. Let's talk about another prospect that got called up for a lot more money. And that's James Wood, added in 154 leagues, got called up last Sunday. He was picked up wherever available. It wasn't available everywhere, obviously. High of 588. I don't know how people still have 588. As low as 93, which at least that's respectable. I can say there's at least backup, like the lowest bid was respectable in these leagues. In the first week of action, heading into Monday, hit safely in 6-7, 320, 1 homer, 1 stolen base. Walked almost 20%, which I thought was very impressive from a young ball player. The expectations are extremely high for James Wood. I don't believe I got any James Wood this week, but what were your thoughts on him? Because I need middle infield and corner infield way more than I need outfield right now, and that's where I focused on Brooksley over James Wood.
Matt Wallner just hit a home run. Anyway,
beautiful. I know. That's one guy I'm kind of bummed I didn't take a chance on with the schedule this past week, but he'll be a fun. He had 19 bombs in AAA with five steals, hitting like 279.
He's also the same guy that was pinch hit for in the sixth inning on Sunday. So yeah, that was
twins,
like
baby twins. It's what they have. It's like we make jokes. It's the hockey off hockey lines just keep shifting.
And I jokingly text somebody because I'm like, he's batting ninth today. There's a chance if he's batting ninth, we're going to see Wallner get six play appearances in three starts because I could see him getting two and then getting pinch hit for every game.
Yep.
He is a strict platoon, but that also means against lefties, he's coming in as well, which is nice. Like, so that's where you like, it's six and it'll be six play appearances in three games.
But by the way, real quick, that's why I shout out the White Sox bullpen for just giving up four runs right there in the seventh. The Correa bomb, Wallner bomb, like you guys are just is just lights out stuff there, man. Like Brooks Lee's coming up in the eighth now. Like leave that gas can out, boys.
Come Jordan on, Leisure, go. Baby, welcome back. He just got activated today.
He's at a leisurely rate, giving up.
Home there run. It is. Appreciate you.
All right, so let's talk anyway. James Wood. Would you like to go down rabbit holes with me and Curlin? So I apologize, but I don't apologize. So Curlin, what do you got on James Wood?
So wouldn't you like to know? with James Wood, it is what it is. Like I'm just saying, I'm stuck on like bad puns.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. For reference, the two leagues where he went 588. You want to know who could you? I can give you 100 guesses. You would never guess who he dropped for if you didn't look already.
I did not look. The other guy, was he like a common ad or just like only in a couple leagues?
No, like the guy who added James Wood for 588 did it twice in OCs, and he dropped the same guy that had no business being on a roster in a 15, let alone a 12, because it was Robert Gasser. It's like this guy,
not paying attention.
This guy woke up and just said, I'm gonna spend all my money. And just like stop the league from getting them, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, it is what it is. I want people to play the whole way through, so I'm not mad about that.
Me too, but
it just makes me laugh. Like, okay, thanks, dude.
Yeah. But Wood is just that it's the top prospect, the guy with all like the guy that if there's a difference maker out there for offense, he's playing every day, he's batting top of the order. He's everything, and of course he flashed it all the first week he was up. So of course Wood is gonna get those bids, and I think he's worth a shot. You're talking to the guy who bid on Noelia Marte with the same hopes of like maybe not the power hopes, but I thought the batting average and everything he's not doing is what I was hoping for Marte. That's one of those things where this is where you have to take your shot. There's only gonna be so many impact bats or potential impact bats. And Wood is one of those last final guys. The pedigree's there. The playing time is there every day. Push back. And I agree with you. I think I heard you mention this. Outfield being a lot easier to come by, especially in 12s.
Yes.
Is I can understand not breaking the bank for him. Like I still, even though it's been a bad week, I still would have preferred, and I did go after Marte harder because I needed the CI help more. And I think Marte's gonna be fine. I still believe
in Marte. Noelvi Marte, everybody.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Marte. I forgot there's like 15 Martes in Noelvi. Yeah. Can I call him by his first name because we're cool like that?
Yeah, Noelvi, it's your boy.
Yeah,
he's my boy. We both get suspended for stuff. We get it.
Yeah, but I need to take it. If I took PEDs, maybe I would lose weight.
You just get bigger.
No, I would have an oblique. I still don't think those are real.
You have an oblique. You just can't find it. No, I have a six pack. It's somewhere down there.
Yeah, it's actually being hidden by the keg. Yes.
Yes.
But I still don't think obliques are real muscle. it's okay. We're fat. We can talk about this stuff anyway. Joe G with the muscles. Thanks, buddy. Anyway, I don't know. I don't really have anything else to add. So, yeah, I still believe in Noelvi Marte, and I think if I had to prioritize them, I still would prefer Noelvi just for the simple fact of third base. But all things being equal, I think Wood would get the edge just because I think the ceiling could be a little more there, and he's hitting higher in the lineup, and those little things give James Wood the edge in terms of, like, if I had a preference, a full-on preference with nothing else mattering. So in a vacuum, I guess is the word I'm looking for, is the phrase. So James Wood would still be that guy. But either way, I like them both. I think both are going to be your best shot at a difference maker down the stretch from offense, whereas pitching has like 15 of them, as we talked about earlier, about to come. And we'll have more of these weeks where we're talking about all these guys getting added.
Yep. Xander Bogaerts, third most added in 126 leagues, as high as 309. I respect those moves because he's rehabbing, and there's a rumor he could come back for the All-Star break. Might be most likely right after. He was supposed to be like done for the season, so this is kind of worries me that he came back too soon, but we'll wait and see.
I jumped everywhere.
You should have. So I just wanted to comment on that. We don't have to really break down. If he's available, go get Xander Bogaerts. So it's pretty common sense stuff.
I will say that, like, if I had to pick between
he wasn't playing great, but I think he was just hurt.
Well, I don't think he was. No, I think he just sucked. But I also think that Bogaerts was also. You have to remember, Bogaerts wasn't good for the first half of last year either. He took off in the final month or two, right? Like, it was
all we're looking for. Give me one good month, and we're good.
But is the power going to be there with coming off a shoulder? Like that's where
I'm worried. He came back too soon. Like, I'm me terrified. Too. I'm really wondering what's going on there.
And that's why I'm like, if I had to pick between him or Brooks Lee, I think I'd prefer Brooks Lee right now. Just for reference of like where I'm
at.
Would
you rank? How would you rank Lee, Colt Keith, and Xander Bogaerts?
I'm gonna go. Maybe I'm buying too much into the hype of Lee, but I think I'm gonna go with Lee, Bogaerts, Keith. But like, I would still group them all together. Like, I like all of them, and I think Bogaerts. I'm a little because I actually it's funny because I added him for like $7 a couple weeks ago in a main just to stash him. So I have Bogaerts. So this and I don't have any Lee. So I'm not really. There's no bias here, obviously. And I have plenty of Keith in leagues that matter to me still.
Funny, too, because like I respect what you just said right there, because so many times doing content, like I'll sit there and clown on Kershaw. Don't think I'm not putting like $4 bids out there. And in an OC, I could probably get him for $4 in some league when he comes back, and I'll have Clayton Kershaw. But I'm not going to break. My point is I'm not going to go break the bank for a guy. It's like you said, you know, you prefer these other guys, but Bogaerts is cheap when you added him. You couldn't afford Brooks Lee. It doesn't mean you don't like Lee over Bogaerts. It's just kind of the way the cookie crumbles as you go through a season. Like, and build this team. So
yeah, maybe I'm just too down on Bogaerts. I'm just aggravated because as someone who has, I have a lot of Bogaerts between. I love the price because I'm like, oh, there's such a high floor here. But then he looked so bad to start the year. Like he started off really good for a week or two and then just went complete like down the tank. And then now you mentioned with the injury, Bogaerts. It scares me that he's coming back this soon. Like I'm not as optimistic. I'm gonna add him because I think Bogaerts plays every day when he's up. I don't think he comes back and doesn't play. I think playing time has value. And for the price it was to acquire, I think it was a smart acquisition for those who did, because again, playing time has value. I just don't know. I don't have the expectation of Bogaerts being Bogaerts of old. I hope for it because I have a lot of them, but I'm just not expecting it because I really do think he came back sooner than, I mean, again, he was, so, there was, it was what out for season was the original thought. Suddenly, yep. Yeah, not only is he back, but he's back with a 2.5 months left of the year.
Yep, it's a good run. It's a good
like,
run.
I'm gonna trot him out there and hope for the best, but I'm not. My expectations are really, really, they're tempered. And if I'm wrong, I'll be happy to be wrong because trust me, I could use Bogaerts of old. Please, I can use him.
All right, let's move on spots. To the next guy. We got
I'm
you.
Pleading,
got
you. Please, yeah, please.
We gotta move on. We gotta move on.
Okay.
Gaudy Telez was added in 112 leagues for the 112 people that forgot he still existed because he's been outstanding since June 1st, 349, six homers. He had three homers last week, even a stolen base. We've talked about him a lot on this show. I know you were in on him before I added him somewhere else. I'm going to keep riding this train. They had a lot of I think they played five or six righties this week. So big week for the Telez train.
At least the sheet I'm looking at says six, but this is also the same sheet that was telling me wrong stuff about the Brewers yesterday. But, Rowdy's a guy that I think everyone loved it. The industry, he was industry darling last year, or was it 2 years ago? Either way, industry darling. And then last year was like, let's buy back on the low because he started playing time, but just somewhere else. And when I say buy back on the low, I mean more so either 15s as a reserve rounder or in your drafting holds. Like that's what people were. And then this year, okay, I guess I'll take him in the reserve rounds of the 15s because he's going to play, but I'm not expecting much. And then Rowdy started slow. But now Rowdy's looked like Rowdy. And I mean, I don't have I'm not going to get my hopes up because anyone can run hot for any period of time. But the difference in him and you and everyone who's played the sport or played this game long enough or watched Rowdy play knows that Rowdy, like, there's a track record there. So it gives you a little more optimistic that this can actually stick a little bit, not to this level. He's not going to hit 300, whatever, but. Rowdy Telez, the power. Seeing the power come back is really.
The powers there is all I care about.
That's kind of what I'm hoping for is legitimate because we know Rowdy Telez is a 30 plus home run guy in the past, and we know it's there. So if he found his swing and if if things are clicking, I think the power can be legitimate, and that's what I'm hoping for. That's what I'm hoping sticks, because wouldn't it be really funny if Rowdy's that league winner type of like, yeah, we just got 20 home runs from Rowdy in the second half, and then next year we overdraft him again because that's what's going to happen.
That would happen.
I'm not doing it. Nope, not going to do it. I'm telling you now. So next year when I start doing it, tell me. I said I wouldn't. Just remind me this, like, this conversation.
All right, I'll remind you next time. Colin Ray added in 103 leagues, as high as 73, as low as a dollar. Colin Ray has a two-step this week against Pittsburgh and Washington, so that got everyone's attention. The 3.34 ERA got a lot of people's attention, but I'm going to mention at 9.6% K to walk, which is blah, bad, and a 4.60 Sierra. I've been anti-Colin Ray for a long time, but I will admit the two-step is nice, so I get it, but I'm not doing it because the blow-up's going to happen any day, and I don't want to be a part of it.
That's pretty much it. I was looking at it. The home runs are down, but that makes sense because home runs are down across the league. At least they have been. It's probably going to start coming back. I mean, it's already been working its way back up. But the strand rate's above average for Colin Ray. That K minus walk rate is like the worst of his career as a big leaguer, which is funny considering he's having one of the best years of his career overall. I don't know. The barrel rate's up. I'm trying to find like a reason. Like the ground ball rate's not even that great. Only 42%. I'm trying to find where Colin Ray is succeeding at. I think he's just avoiding the hard hits and the home runs, which would make sense. At the end of the day, though, I'm with you. There's really not enough there for any real optimism. He's a streamer, and I get that. So I think that the two step in a week where you're heading to All-Star break, there's no two steps next week. I get it.
Yep, I'm with you. Same thing for Jose Quintana, added in 93 leagues, as high as 24, as low as it all. At least that's like cheap for a rental. But another guy, you know, he's got the 4.22 ERA, like 4.6 Sierra, give or take. A K to walk below 10% also, but he gets Nationals, he gets Colorado. So I guess similar situation there.
Yeah, probably.
All right, this one I'm really curious to get your thoughts here. Yariel Rodriguez, because I was all in on him first time through. And then the Jays gave me the big old fisting, telling me like, hey, we're just going to pitch him two innings a game and no fun, maybe three if you're lucky. Well, he's come back from the IL, 6 2/3, 6 innings, allowed 1 total run, 6 Ks in both starts. I will say this, it was like 85 pitches, so it seems like there's more of a pitch count than an innings situation with the Ariel, which I let some of like my Substack people know when they ask me questions. So just be prepared for that. If he's like not controlling his pitch as well, it could be another 3 inning outing. But the fact they're willing to let him go 6+ makes me very angry. I was not back. I'm very angry. I still have my shares of Yariel Rodriguez.
I don't understand. Where did it come from? Because when he came back from the IL, he pitched 1.1 innings, gave up 4 earned, and we kind of laughed like, okay, he's still. And then the next outing was another one inning outing. Only faced 4 batters, walked one walk, no strikeouts, but technically a better outing, right? Turns around and throws back-to-back 6-inning outings. What? When? Why? How? Who? I just want to understand where this came from. Yep. Like, why are they like, you know what? We're just going to let you go. What changed that he hasn't thrown more than 4 innings in the outing at all this year, including his minor leagues? Suddenly, 2 6-inning outings out of absolutely nowhere, not even built up at this point because he's come off back-to-back one-inning outings. So I don't think anyone missed because there was no reason to expect this type of thing. We all missed, I mean, because there's no reason. There was zero indication this was coming. Zero. And not just that. Not only did Yariel come out and do this, but he did it. He was successful, like very good against Houston, which I'm guessing was a full. Yeah, at that point, everyone was healthy except for Tucker. Now, yeah. Seattle. Yeah, Seattle's they've been awful. They've been really bad lately. So that's just catching them. It's catching a bad team on a bad run. But still, he did what he was supposed to do against them. Now I'm waiting for the rug pull because it's coming. However, with that being said, it's still optimistic. I can't sit here and act like I'm not optimistic about it. But you can be annoyed by it. You have every right to be frustrated. But to be fair, looking at this, there was zero indication he's going to go from one inning pitch and back-to-back outings to 6-6. Yeah. No, it's not fair to anybody. To like nobody expected this. People probably started him out of sheer hope and needs for strikeouts and maybe something, but no one saw this coming. It's just you lucked into it if you did. With that being said, I don't know if Yair Rodriguez is going to be, he's not, this isn't going to be like a Ronald Blanco situation. I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong, or it could be. And then I'm like, then I'm really frustrated because I was out and I should have, instead of doubling down, I should have taken my usual route of, you know what, second chances have been the way to go.
That has been the way to go, so we'll see. But yeah, I didn't get any, I don't think, coming back, which is a bummer.
Unless your name is Tyler Black, actually.
I'm going to ask you about a couple more guys. I'm going to skip over a few. Like, we know Jimmy Garcia was added because he should be back mm-hmm. soon as the closer. Dean Kramer, a two-step. Parker Meadows, people didn't, they missed the hamstring information, but we'll talk about that some other time. Heaney, Montas had a two-step. Shane Boz, obviously, for he wasn't available in some leagues, 58 leagues, as high as 355. Just real quick, I need a quick answer, Curlin. Quick answer. Shane Boz gets the Yankees this week. Do you start Shane Boz?
Yep.
Okay, there we go. That's all I need to hear. Drew Thorpe, he should have been added by now, so I'm glad he finally got picked up everywhere else. I want to ask you about James Outman. We kind of talked about him briefly off air, and we were both excited about him in Fab, and we'll both talk about our ads of James Outman. But Outman was added in 51 leagues, as high as 37, as low as a dollar. Kind of feels like we kind of joked off air, kind of like a forgotten man in Fab. He came back, went 2-for-4 in his debut, pinch hit, got a single in his next game. So like 3-for-7, or 3-for-5, I should say, to start things out since he came back. When he's in the minors, Outman hit 279 with 9 homers and 7 steals. In my mind, I'm thinking, okay, Outman last year, hot, cold, finished phenomenal, still at 2020. I'm like, the skill set's still there. To me, Andy Pahe is struggling. Like, there's a reason, there's an avenue where this could work at some point. Right now, Outman's taking the Jason Hayward role, but we never know. So, what was it that got you in on Jason Outman? Because I was, or James Outman, because I was very interested on him.
So to start off the year, I was very out, and
man,
I almost did it. But I was like, let me refrain. It was too easy. But I was really out on Outman to start the year. Like I got one early share in DCs, and I was like, I don't like this price because he's a platoon bat. I know the tools are there, but there's a lot of questions in the rest of the stuff. I know there's, but whatever. But now you're telling me I can get him for free off the waiver wire. I'm a lot more interested. And by free, I mean like here's the thing. He's been crushing. Outman's been crushing AAA, and he was stealing bases, hitting home runs. It was stupid how good he was. You mentioned the numbers for Outman in AAA. So I've been trying to find a way to stash him. I'm like, but man, they really don't like, every time there was an injury, Vargas would come up and it had to be an outfield injury. And finally there was one that opened up the playing time. Maybe that's what people think. It's short term. Hayward will come back and Outman will be gone. And maybe that's true. But when you're telling me I can get a guy with tools like home runs and stolen bases with Outman, the plus, that's like a double plus glove in center field. That's why he's already playing center again, because the defense is there. He was crushing it in minors, you mentioned, and now he's come up and he has a hit in each of the games he's played. And this guy was a top 150 to 175 pick. And I wasn't in on that price, but it still shows you the potential that was there. People were buying in at that cost. And we saw, you mentioned how good he was in spurts last year. It was very streaky because he does have a hole in his swing where there's swing and miss there. No denying that. But how often is it that you can get a guy on one of the best teams in baseball that has the flashy tools, that's going to play at least a strong side platoon? I don't know. I saw a lot of pluses, a lot of upside and potential there that made me, I got him in every Fab League I was able to. And I was unfortunately, I mispriced the market. I was a little, I was the high bid in some spots by a long shot, and not like triple digits bad, but it was still like, I was just aggressive. And it's because of all this stuff. I'm like, I know draft price doesn't matter anymore, but he's still a guy with the type of tools that people wanted him inside the top 200 for a reason. And next year, if he finishes strong, he'll be right back in that similar range, maybe a little lower. And I think Outman has all that stuff to at least give us juice. He has that category juice that we all want. The RBI, he's batting like what, sixth roughly in this lineup. Right, yeah. There's plenty of RBI opportunity there, even in this lineup, and that's the other thing. The bottom half of this lineup has been notorious. Like, we all talk about how bad the bottom half of the lineup is, but Outman was expected to be part of that and part of what made it good. Muncy there's no sight of Muncy in the near future. They could trade and ruin all this, and they also could be part of it for Outman. But at the end of the day, I don't see many players with the opportunity and category juice potential come off waiver wire, even in the platoon role as Outman. And that's what got me excited to go in and take a shot, especially considering that the cost was actually very affordable.
Yep, I'm with you. I was all about it as well. So we'll see how this goes, and hopefully he gets some good runs. I think the talent is there. Last player I want to ask you about, because I got a ton of questions when he hit 3 home runs the other day, is Ben Rice. Picked up in the 44 leagues, as high as 212, as low as $2. Rice is hitting 273 with four homers and 12 RBIs since he was recalled mid-June. He hit all four of those home runs last week and had eight of those 12 RBIs last week. I want to emphasize all in 1 week. Did we talk about a player earlier in the show named Luis Matos that did that too? People are very excited about Ben Rice, first base catcher eligibility, all those fun things. I think the skill set's there. The fact he plays every day with the catcher eligibility, I get it. But Alex, like, some people were ready to sell the farm for Ben Rice. So what's your thoughts on Mr. Rice on this one? As he's pretty much gone everywhere now, but is this someone we should be this excited about?
I think it's the catcher eligibility that really sells it, because he's still platooning. Like, as well as he hit last week, Ben Rice still sat against the one lefty they faced. And that was by design, because he hasn't been playing against lefties almost since he's come up. Maybe it would happen to be a good time for a day off because it was like after three or four games. But when a guy is swinging a bat like that, usually you don't sit him, and they still sat him against the lefty. But Rice is a guy that, if you look at the track record in the minors, the power's been there. There's been a little bit of speed. The plate discipline, I think Rizzo, like the plate discipline reminded me of Rizzo, with like the high walk rates and while still keeping the K rates lower. And that lefty swing in Yankee Stadium, we knew it would eventually play up. And those home runs weren't cheapies either, so it wasn't like Yankee Stadium specials. But at the end of the day, Ben Rice is just rock solid. And I like him a lot as a C2. I don't want him as anything else besides my catcher, though. If he's not your catcher, I don't think he's good enough to be.
That was where my question was. Some people were wanting to make him their first baseman and corner infielder.
Maybe CI. Like, well, right now, if you're talking about, if you're rostering Rowdy Tellez, Ben Rice is. I think Ben Rice is in that conversation. So if you like, at least in my opinion, I think that they're in that same conversation right now. Because they're both platoon bats. Rice is leading off now, which added plate appearances, and he's batting ahead of Soto and Judge. Doesn't get much better in terms of protection. A guy with that type of zone recognition playing in the Yankee Stadium, Ben Rice has a lot of potential for upside. And I think if nothing else, he belongs in the conversation with Rowdy Tellez at CI.
That's a good comp. That's fair.
Yeah. And that's why I'm like, there's reasons for optimism, but it's still a rookie. There's still platoon matters. So that's why I'm like, he's not quite like, if you're playing without a CI or without a catcher two spot, he's a catcher one. Probably. He's probably definitely top 12 right now with catcher being so bad. He's probably a top 12 catcher, but it's just the CI part makes it kind of like I think you need a CI spot to get him in there. If you have a good catcher, then it's kind of tough to have a good, if you play in one catcher leagues, Ben Rice is tough to force into your lineup with one catcher and only a first base. But anything with CI or second catcher, I keep saying that Ben Rice is a top 12 catcher right now.
That's fair. All right. Let's talk about our fab pickups of the week. Mr. Kerlin, do you want to start with 15s like usual? You want to go 12s? I'll let you have the floor on this one and I'll follow suit.
That means I should probably have them ready. How about you? Yep. I can pull other. I just went to Fab, the thing that you're supposed to go for Fab stuff, and it said Fab is currently processing.
You need to reload.
That's finally, like, huh? So it's, yeah. What did I miss? That's weird. All right, Fab results. So 15s. I added James Outman. You'll see that's a common thread. Oh man, I made 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 moves in this league. Holy crap. This is the main event. Well, I Edward Olivares entering last week was playing every day and then suddenly full platoon. So I added him the week before, dropped him. I added Justin Henry Malloy 3-0, dropped Ty France. Oh, I added James Outman 27-6, by the way. Matt Wallner, I got 2-2. I won him 2-2. Dropped Trent Grisham, who was just serve, like, I needed outfield depth. I was dying here. I added James Paxton for $2, dropped Vezia. Austin Wells 2-0, dropped Kyle Higashioka, whatever. I can't say the last name.
Higashioka, yes.
Yeah, that one. You're the catcher guy. And then added Max Schumann and dropped Gavin Lux. Because, yes, I had Gavin Lux. He had a hot week. I needed MI help. I told you, when I say injuries have ravaged me, like, I was starting Trent Grisham and Gavin Lux last week out of sheer need for, like, playing time. And then that was just one league. That was just a stupid amount of moves, but very, very, very needed. Okay. Sorry. I'm watching stuff. I'm watching stuff, I'm getting all squirrely. So my other main, I added James Outman for 56, dropped for 29 was a runner up, dropped Josh Jung. My last Josh Jung, I just had to move on. Added Andre Piante or Pallante, however you say it, dropped Jared Jones 9-2. That one hurt because, I mean, I've dropped Jared Jones and Jesus Lizardo like almost back-to-back weeks now in this league. This is also the same league I've dropped what Jeffers and now a couple others I just mentioned. It's been bad. I also made the same Justin Henry Molloy 7-5, dropped Ty France in this league. Added Clark Schmidt 4-2. He's doing a throwing program. I just wanted to see where it goes. I talked about shorter stashes, but I wanted to give him this week, next week after the All-Star break, and see if he starts that rehab or not. Because if not, then I'm dropping him sooner than later. I got him for $4, and then Joshua Palacio, who I started tonight, got the home run, 2-1. Got him there and started him there, and then now it's a lot less work. James Outman for Verdugo, 17-2. I overbid. I told you I overbid for Outman. I was overly excited. Brandon Lau dropped Tyler Soderstrom. Added Michael Wacha. Dropped Paxton. Added Telez. Dropped Turner in this OC. Added Drew Thorpe for $2. Dropped Kyle Gibson for $1. Because yeah, Thorpe was available everywhere. And I just kind of. Oh look, I added James Outman in this 12. I dropped Willie Abreu here. Here you go. I dropped Abreu.
There you go.
I knew I dropped him somewhere. I had him in every OC, and this was one of those leagues where I'm just making moves. I'm just rotating guys. I added John Gray, dropped Tobias Myers, added Frankie Montas, dropped Marcus Stroman. Guys that I probably shouldn't have no business. I'm just streaming guys in this league, trying to make up because I'm punting ratios at this point. Just this league is screwed. Oh, I added Telez here as well, dropped Matt Vierling. Oh, and Clark Schmidt for $1. Apparently, I don't know why I keep adding Clark Schmidt. That was dumb. I'm gonna drop him again. Oh, look, added James Outman 7-0. Dropped Jose Siri. I actually added Rowdy Tellez and dropped Michael Massey in this OC.
Yeah, I don't hate that.
Hey, look, another Clark Schmidt.
Yeah, are you doing? You're doing 12s right now. We're supposed to do 15s together, and then we do 12s together.
Oh, I knew I ran through. Whatever. I got my OLAC. I can save my OLAC for last.
No, just do them all now. Just do them all now. You're out of there,
Curly. I'm out of practice. It's been a long time. I added Alex Cobb here 3-2. Added Clark Schmidt here 2-0 on purpose. I'll tell you why in a second. And James Outman 31-1 because I can't get enough James Outman. I got Outman everywhere. But I made sure I got Cobb here. 3-2 was really great price. I knew this OLAC is running kind of cheap. I should have known better with Outman. But with Clark Schmidt, I added him here on purpose, knowing I'm low on money and I want to stash here. I'm in a spot where I'm top five and I keep fluctuating between like second and fifth. So I want guys with potential impact. I'm willing to stash them for $1 or $2. And if I have to move on, I'll move on. But this is that team where it's like mostly healthy. Things are going right. And I have room for stashes. And this is one of those times where taking Schmidt made sense because he's already doing a throwing program. And if he comes back by August, I get 2 months of a guy who was having that breakout season. Doesn't mean he'll continue it, but there's very few pitchers available on the waiver wire that offer that. And it's a 15 team format. So that's why I'm just stashing Clark Schmidt. But probably, honestly, he's also an easy drop if I need to.
Good.
I think I got them all.
As Ben Tidd says, the show is off the rails. Yes.
Always.
Yes,
it is. Always.
All right. So I'll start with my 15s, my OLAC. I added, there's two names you're going to hear a lot of. First is Brooksley.
Somebody asked about James John Gray real quick. I think he's a drop.
No, I put a start on that because it's a listener question we had at the end. Let me host the show,
Curly. I don't want to. Get Ben. Bring Ben back. He's easier to deal with.
Oh, he'll be back next week. Brooks Lee dropped Jake Fraley 121-78. So I told you I really wanted him. Runner up of 78, so I don't feel horrible. The other name you'll hear a lot from me, and Curlin and I did not talk before the ads, I added James Outman pretty much everywhere. Added James Outman, but this is where it gets fun. Dropped Cooper Criswell 26-1. One runner up. Awesome. Thank you, guys. And then here's the fun one because people might ask, what am I doing? But I added DJ Hers, dropped Luis Medina 22-21. Hers got sent to AAA. He'll be back after the All-Star break. They didn't really need him this week, so they got long relief, and they wanted to limit his innings. I've already read a beat writer talk about this, so he'll be back the week after the All-Star break or if the following week. He'll be back real soon, so I'll stash because he's had three rough starts against the Cardinals, the Padres, the Mets. I probably wouldn't have started him in two or three anyways. So he has a 5.17 ERA, but a 3.24 Sierra and a 23% K to walk. The skills are very good for DJ Hers. So I'm a fan of what he's doing, and I'll take that as an upgrade over Luis Medina. Bubba in the Bloom Listener League 1, added Brooks Lee, dropped Otto Lopez 88-43, added James Outman, dropped Tommy Pham 26-4, added Luis Campusano, dropped Miguel Amaya 5-0, added Trevor Larnach, who went deep tonight, dropped Patrick Sandoval 3-3, so got the unicorn bid there. Auction League 2, added Brooks Lee, dropped Eloy Jimenez, who's not playing every day, plays every 2 days, gets a day off, 88-67, added Rowdy Tellez, dropped Tyler Soderstrom 21-7. I had a lot of money in that league, so I wanted to get my guys and walk away. And then in my main event qualifier, added Brooks Lee, dropped Jorge Mateo, 121-31 runner-up, fun. Andrew Heaney dropped Griffin Canning, 44-34. Heaney has been outstanding. I wrote about him three different times this weekend. Bloom's talked about him quite a bit. Really good stuff there. And this one, I also had a DJ Hurst, dropped Alec Marsh, 34-26. And then Rowdy Tellez dropped Tyler Soderstrom, 22-10. So at least the runner-ups felt kind of good for once. All right, going to the OCs now. Here we go again. Added Brooks Lee, dropped Eloy Jimenez, 89-62. Fair, I'll take
that's not bad.
No, I'll take that one. Trust me, it changes as these leagues go on. It's very frustrating. I'll take 89-62 all day long. That's cool. Added Shane Boz, dropped David Festa for his, you know, two starts from hell. 47-29. I was pretty pleased with that for Shane Boz potentially. Added James Outman, dropped Luis Matos, 16-0. Added Rowdy Tellez, dropped Josh Bell, 16-0. Added Nolan Chanwal with all the righties they're going to face this week. Dropped Dansby Swanson, 9-0. For those asking, Swanson has been atrocious this season. And if you just want to do season stats alone, it's been that's the wrong. That's the right Swanson. It's been beyond brutal this year. When we look at why are the stats? That is, what the hell did they do with their?
Fangraphs?
I'm looking at Fangraphs. I hate this new update sometimes, man. It pisses me off.
It's
tame. I'm getting used to it. He's hitting 204 on the year with 8 homers and 5 RBIs. But what I was looking for, but they have his fielding stats on.
Yeah, wait, else. What?
Yeah, I'm trying to look for his stats and they're not even here.
You have to
I was gonna say his rest of the season projections were like 9 home runs and like a 240 average. I'm like, I can find that on the waiver wire. So
let me click on someone else.
It's only him. Yeah. So I'm making sure it wasn't just me. So, okay, good.
I think someone needs to point that out to them. Like, hey, we only have fielding stats. Well, you know what? Fielding stats are all he's good at. So you know.
Pretty much. You got to highlight the good. Okay. OC2 added Brooks Lee, dropped Dansby Swanson. Now we're going to have fun. So remember the last one, 89-67. Mm-hmm. This is I've got 112 because I had a ton of money. So I wanted to get 112 runner up 22. So we're having fun here. James Wood went for 279, runner up for 276 in this league. So that was fun. Then I added James Outman, dropped Willy Abreu, 26-0. Added Andrew Heaney, dropped Sean Manaea, who Manaea's been good. I'm going to stream him back and forth, 6-0. Added Max Kepler, dropped Colton Cowser, 3-0. So this league, I made some, I dropped Swanson, Abreu, Manaea, and Cowser, all guys that I think will get added in the coming week. And then OC3 gets more fun. I added Brooks Lee, dropped Dansby Swanson, 12-0. No runner-up bid. Got him for $12. I had, like, no money, so I put low bids. Got all my guys. Added James Outman, dropped Willy Abreu, 8-0. Added Rowdy Tellez, dropped Tyler Soderstrom, 6-0. Added Nolan Chanwal, dropped Eloy Jimenez, 3-0. So I spent, $29 for 4 players without a runner-up bid, and I'm already low on cash. So that was amazing. That was fun stuff. So, yeah, a lot of James Outman, a lot of Brooks Lee, good amount of Pablo Rowdy Tellez and Nolan Chanwal for their weeks they have coming up, and a lot of DJ Hers and deeper formats. So we'll see how that goes. Ben Tidd sees it as well. But
he's a liar. I'm pressing dashboard. Nothing's popping up.
Yeah, nothing's popping up. It's done. Yeah, it's broken. He admitted it now. All right, we have a couple listener questions. We'll start with the ones in the chats here. Britton Allen says, Montero, it's K Montero from Detroit. Gavin Williams or Diaz from Arizona. He's making his spark tonight. For one bench spot, who do you pick up? I pick up Gavin Williams.
Yep. I don't know if we're supposed to elaborate, but I just think it's most proven, best team.
Yep. Michael C says, John Gray looks very broken. Was going to ask if he's dropping 12. I think he's very close, but what were you going to say on that one earlier?
I think in 12s, it's fine. Didn't he just have a decent outing? Like, he kind of, like, okay, looks like I know if his
page actually comes up properly. I'll let you know.
His game log. No, so his last outing wasn't great. No, it's last two outings that were bad. Last outing was 300 runs over 4 innings. Yeah, he's not looking great right now.
His last 4 have been atrocious.
Yeah, you're right. And I added him for the 2-start week in a 15 teamer where I need the innings, and I mean, I took my shot. He was, there's a reason why he was like $3. Like, that's like, what was it? Yeah, he was, it was a 12. Oh, it was a 12. Damn it. Why did I add him in a 12? Not good. No, I don't know if I was paying much attention. Oh, no, that's the league. Wait, where did I add him? And now I can't find where I added him.
Next question. You can have fun with that. Rand Simon asked, Bobby Miller is scheduled to start tomorrow at Philadelphia and Sunday at Detroit. Start him in 12s, or do you use Shane Boz versus the Yankees?
Ooh.
Because the question is, he says, do you think Miller even makes the Detroit start on Sunday?
That's what I was going to say. I don't trust that he does.
I go with Shane Boz.
I think you go with Boz or Baz. Is it Baz or Boz?
It's probably Baz. I'm probably ticking everybody off.
Because I call him Baz, but Baz, like tomato, tomato, Baz, Boz.
I can check. But and then we had one more question that you sent me earlier from our buddy Joe G.
Which actually, thanks to him, because I know he listens, that actually kind of sprung the whole show together.
The show, yeah. So the question was, Heston Kjerstad, James Outman, Colton Cowher, how would you rank them right now?
And after we talked about the Orioles even more, because I was torn between Kjerstad and Outman, but I think it's clearly Outman, Kjerstad, Kowser right now. But it's such a fluid situation that those three, it goes back to they belong in the same group. And any given moment, you kind of have to pivot to them. But right now, I think Outman is the way I would go.
Yeah, I got Outman. I got Outman, Kjerstad, Kowser from me.
Yeah, same.
And I can't tell how to pronounce Shane's last name because I don't know what these symbols mean. So I think I have to listen to it off air because I'm not going to play it on air to find out. But that's, I love it. And one last thing, I saved a tweet from earlier. Colt Keith over the last month, 85 at-bats, 306, 5 homers, 10 ribbies, 11 runs, 2 steals, 878 OPS. So fun stuff there. All right, Mr. Curlin, final thoughts before we head on out of here. Another fun-filled episode, my friend.
Listen, this is why I do one episode every few weeks, because I make up for it. You know, we run long on every one of them. So you're welcome.
Yeah, that's his final thoughts. There we go. I love it.
Boz?
All right. Yeah, but they have it. I can't even describe the letters they have on the thing. On
Tid wrote in B A H Z.
Well, the way they have it on the baseball reference, it's like two. It's two like slanted lines, and in the middle, it's Boz B A H Z, all in caps.
Well, then, I think Boz would be it.
And that's kind of my guess too. But
yeah, that's stupid. He pronounces his name weird. Anyway,
okay, well, Curlin, you're weird. But we're gonna end it on that.
Off everyone who listens to your show, sorry.
It's okay. You did that way before that point of the show.
Yeah, you're right.
We're gonna wrap it up there. Make sure y'all check out Mike on Twitter at Mike_Curlin, MLBplayingTime.com, everybody. You can find myself over on Twitter at BDIntric. And we'll be back with you guys next week. It might be Curlin. It's probably gonna be Ben, but we'll see how it goes. But it's gonna be interesting anyways, because we have the All-Star break next week. So
why don't you bring both of us on?
How about you guys? No. All right, so we'll wrap it up there, everybody. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back with you guys next week. But for now, this is your Week 16 Fab Recap on Bench with Bubba, episode 678. Catch you all next time.